Hare Krishna. So I welcome all of you for today evening's program. And thank you for coming. We are a little late today. I had a program for the children just downstairs. They had a lot of questions, so went a little over time. So we'll be continuing our talk on what your phone can teach you about your mind. And we discussed two main aspects. In the first talk in the series, discussed about how the mind has its default setting, just like a device has its default settings. And changing the default settings requires conscious effort. We can't just expect it to be changed simply by our intention. And in the second session, we discussed about how in today's world, there is a lot of attempt to improve the hardware. But improving the hardware can't solve software problems. Similarly, just improving things at the physical level does not offer mental relief. People are comfortable, but they are comfortably miserable. And in this session, we will, today's and tomorrow's session, we'll primarily talk about transforming. Default settings are there, and today's world focuses too much on externals, not on internals, not on changing the settings internally. And for changing the settings, what can we do? There is an external aspect to it, and there is an internal aspect to it. So, not exactly external, internal, but you'll get what I mean by it. There's a practical and a transcendental aspect to it. So today I'll focus on the practical aspect as we function in relationship with the outer world. Now, most of us may have experienced that sometimes our phone battery just drains off. You know, we are using the phone and just by the end of half day, the battery is almost zero. And they wonder, why did this happen? Maybe sometimes we may have the Bluetooth on, or we may have the location on, or we may find that if we go to the feature and look at what has caused the battery to be consumed, we'll find that, okay, there are some apps which I'm not using at all, but in the background, they're sucking up so much energy. And because they suck up so much energy, so the apps which we want to use, when we want to use them, the batteries run out of power. Like that, in our mind also, there are many desires, there are thoughts, there are inclinations, there are habits which just drain our energy. At one level, worry itself is a great energy drainer. When we feel worried, the worry is like a background agitator, background energy consumer, background attention distractor. It just doesn't allow us to focus on anything. So worry is one thing which can drain our energy. And we'll talk about worry and transcending it in tomorrow's class. Today I'll focus on something else which also drains energy, which we often don't think about so much. Actually, ours is the age of freedom. Everybody wants to be free to have their own rights, to do their own things. If anybody is told, no, you should not do this, you cannot do this, you say, who are you to infringe on my freedom? Everybody wants to have their freedom. However, all freedom is not equally freeing. So, too much choice can actually not free, it can burden. Let's look at it. So, a background app which sucks our energy, one such app is actually the capacity to have too many options in front of us. Let's explain that. Can we go ahead? Okay, so a fundamental thing to understand is that our willpower is a finite resource. Just like our muscle power, it's finite. If we have to carry weights, okay, I can carry, say, this much weight for this much time. Then we won't go around in life just carrying unnecessary weights with us. When I have to carry weights, I'll carry. So sometimes we exert our willpower in unnecessary battles. And then when there are necessary battles which come, we don't have any willpower left. So it is not that many times people feel, I make resolutions and I can't stick to resolutions. I want to change to become a better person, but I'm not able to change. I don't have any willpower. Nobody can actually say that we don't have any willpower. We all have willpower. But our willpower is often consumed by unnecessary things. So first of all, let's consider this point that can anyone say that I don't have any willpower? Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita in 18.35 about determination in the mode of ignorance. Yaya swapnam bhayam shokam vishadam madameva cha navimunchati durmedha druti sapartha tamasi. So he says, druti is determination, tamasi, it is in the mode of ignorance. Now we may think, how can a person in determination, in ignorance, have determination? Actually, that determination is a perverse determination. It is normally determination means holding on to something which is difficult to hold on to, but something which is good. When we hold on to something that is difficult to hold on to, but we determinedly hold on to it despite the difficulty, that is what we call as determination. But if what we are holding on to is good, then that is positive, that is determination. But if we are holding on to something that is bad, that is obstinacy. That is considered negative. Just like Dhritarashtra's attachment to the kingdom. So many people told him, give it up, give it up, give it up. Yes. Dhritarashtra's attachment to Duryodhana, give him up. No, he was held on to it. That acting of holding on can be said to be determination. But actually, it is determination in the mode of ignorance. Because one is holding on to something that is harmful to oneself. So, say some people are very lazy. Now, being lazy is actually not a very pleasant state. People mock us, people deride us, people taunt us. We also feel, I'm not able to do anything. We also feel bad about ourselves, others talk bad about us. But still, despite that, some people persist in being lazy. Now, when there is so much disrespect, irritation, taunting that they are subjected to because of the laziness, and still they hold on to laziness. That is determination. Isn't it? Somebody is an alcoholic addict. Alcohol addict. Now, they waste their money. They make a scene of themselves when they drink too much. Maybe they get a hangover. They throw up sometimes. They spoil their health. They ruin their relationships. They wreck their reputation. But still, they keep drinking. Now, so addiction is actually a form of determination. It is a misdirected determination, but it is determination. So everyone has determination. The question is simply, where is my determination misdirected? So it is when we say that we have to develop determination, it is not that actually we have to develop. We have to simply redirect, find out where my determination is, and if it is not in the healthy direction, get it back. The same principle when you talk about willpower, our willpower is a finite resource in the sense that there are certain things which we just do by the force of habit. Now we can change ourselves, but there are only a limited number of battles that we can fight. So, if our willpower is exerted too many times, then just like if I have to carry a heavy bag and I have to carry it for too long, I just put it down. Just give up. I can't do it. So, if we recognize that our willpower is a finite resource and we need to use it wisely, then what we will do is we will avoid unnecessary battles. I'll explain what this means. Anything there? Okay. Okay. Why is it going back same slides? Okay, let's see. So now, there is a slide on propinquity here. We'll give a simple example to illustrate this. Maybe some slides are here, some slides are not here. So propinquity, basically it's a psychological term. It basically means proximity or the effect on behavior because of proximity. Remember earlier I said that if we have some, we get a snack attack and if there is some fatty food right next to us, we will eat that food. So basically the mind tends to be really lazy and the mind chooses the path of least resistance. So for example, say if this is our office, this is our home, and we are going along and there is a hotel, and in that hotel there is one of our favorite delicacies. It's a fatty, it's not a very healthy delicacy, but we want to, if we just pass along that hotel and we find that, oh, it's empty, the hotel is practically empty, within just a matter of minutes we can be eating that. So even before we realize it, a car will go, we will go inside, take the car there, and we'll be grabbing it. We'll be paying the money, giving it on the counter, we'll take it, we'll start chewing it as we are coming back and driving. On the other hand, if we find that actually there's a big crowd over there, just to get to the counter it will take half an hour and probably the order will take 15 minutes more, then the mind will say, maybe future, 45 minutes, too much time. So now this is not a surefire method at all. If the mind is very attached to it, what to speak of 45 minutes? You know, we may spend hours over there. Sometimes people go on a journey for hours just to get some food which they like somewhere. That's a different thing. There are stray desires which come in the mind. That means we just see something and maybe I can enjoy this. Maybe I can have this. Stray desires that come in the mind, and if the opportunity to enjoy them is easily available, then battling them seems to be like an unnecessary battle. Come on, just do it and move on with life. So we just give in to it. The mind has a path of least resistance. So in that case, the least resistance is, okay, it's available, just do it. But if, as I said, if there's a big crowd over there, it's going to take a long time, then for the mind, the path of least resistance is, forget it. So the mind is basically lazy, and if we have to exert our willpower for each battle, we can't do it for very long. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in 2.58, Yada samharate chayam kurmo angani vasarveshaha indriyan indriyarthebhyas tasya prajna pratishthita. So he says that just as a tortoise withdraws its limbs into itself, similarly, he says, we can withdraw our senses from the sense objects. There are many people nowadays, say in social media, with the so much social media available, there are many companies or many people, you know, they actually regulate access to the internet. Say, okay, in a company, you cannot visit these sites. Why is that? Because they know that people may visit those sites and they will not do work. They will do other things over there. So that regulation actually brings focus. When there is no regulation and there is unlimited access available, people may go here, people may go there, and they will not do their work. And the regulation is there, the facility to, the chances that they will be able to work becomes greater. Now, some people even, if they, I know one of my friends, a devoted writer, he wants to write. So there are writing apps which help. So there is this writing app, it is called Write or Die. So what happens in this app, just as, I'll use this as an example and illustrate the principle. They say you just have to write and type. And the moment you stop typing, the computer starts deleting what you typed. So the idea is to force yourself to type. So say, by that, many people, okay, If I stop typing, it will delete. So let me type something. It may not be great, but the idea is that in literary circles, it said that you can edit a bad page, but you can't edit a blank page. If I've written something down, after that I can edit it and I can improve it. But if I don't have anything written, I can't edit it also. So sometimes for us, external prop and external support helps us to get started on the right thing, or it helps us in stopping doing the wrong thing. This is not a surefire solution. I'll talk about that. Complete solution is something more. But this external prop helps. In the Ramayana, there's the story of Sugriva, who had to flee for his life away from the Kishkindha kingdom. Okay, what is happening here? Okay, I talk about out of sight is out of mind, provided the mind is out of it. That means what? If there is something that is, as I gave the example of, a person is thinking, maybe I'm working on my computer. Maybe I can just check Facebook. Maybe I can just check the latest news. Maybe I can check the latest score, cricket score, whatever it is. Now, that little temptation, they will not actually do it also. But that just consumes the mind. Maybe I should do it. No, I should not. Maybe I should do it. Maybe I should not do it. But suppose a person just decides, next 1 hour I'm going to work, I'll just cut off from the world. I'll disconnect. Then what happens is, the option is closed, then the mind focuses much more easily. There's no guarantee, but the possibility increases more. So when our willpower is expended on small choices, and too much on small choices, then what happens is, when we have to make big choices, we don't have any willpower left for that. So the small choices, I'm just not going to get involved in this. This, I'll not keep this option open for me. Just close this option. Then that helps us in focusing on the big choices. So, when the more, this is the point which I was making, freedom is not just the capacity to, is not just having the facility for unlimited choices. It's a very sluggish response here. Yeah, okay. Freedom comes not by having facility for unlimited choices, but by ability to make wise choices. It is sometimes freedom is, I can do whatever I want to do. Well, if we have hundreds of choices available for us, so much energy may go in just thinking, should I do this, should I do this, should I do this, should I do this, should I do this? Sometimes, we may go to a shopping mall to buy a toothpaste. And there are 100 brands of toothpaste. And then I sit and start thinking, should I buy this, or should I buy this, or should I buy this, or should I buy this? We can spend a whole week looking at the specifications of various toothpastes. And so much energy will get wasted. Okay, we use our intelligence and we make a choice. Psychologists have found that with respect to choosing, there are two kinds of people. There are maximizers, that is the psychological term, there are maximizers and there are optimizers. Maximizers means they feel in every choice that I make, I must make the best choice. So, if I want to buy a new phone, I look at all the phones in the market. And then I'll find the best phone and I'll buy it. The optimizers are, they decide, okay, I want to buy a new phone. I have this much time. I'll spend 3, 4 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours, whatever. 1 week, whatever time. In this much time, whatever phone, good phone I come up to, I'll buy it. They found that in general, those who are maximizers, they actually get a better deal than the optimizers. Naturally, because they're spending more time. But there's a problem with that. Because they spend so much time in trying to get the best deal, so the expectation for the product increases a lot. And then, if you spend 1 month trying to decide which phone to take, And then when you get the phone, we think this phone must be very special. Right? Because the expectation is so high, no product lives up to it. Or there's disappointment. And not only there's disappointment, another thing that happens is there is always the fear in the background. Maybe if I had explored more, I would have found a better choice. I would have found a better choice. So in this way, just keeping, those are maximizers, because they focus too much energy on every single choice that they have to make. Then they just can't move forwards. They spend too much time on each choice and their energy gets dissipated over there. So, okay, this much time I'm going to put, whatever I get, that's gone. I move on. This is not the most important thing in my life. There are many more important things in my life. A phone is important, but there are more important things in my life also. So here again, what is happening is the choice is there, and there can be unlimited choices. But when we get too caught, in choosing small things, we lose a sense of perspective. And then when the big choices have to be made, we don't have time because so much time has gone in making small choices. So, like that, sometimes, especially in today's world, as materialistic civilization has expanded, has advanced, whatever you want to say, the sheer number of material choices that we have, they have expanded so much. And because they've expanded so much, just choosing them takes a lot of time. Now, researchers have found that when people are watching TV, people are actually more attentive, more excited when they are surfing through channels than when they're watching a program. Because when they're surfing through channels, they think, maybe I'll find something good. After they settle down to watch a program, okay, it's a program going on. So what has happened is when the choices expand, actually our mental energy gets consumed in just choosing. And the actual choice in the long run is not that important. No. So when small things take big time, then big things get small time. So when we let our time, let our energy, let our willpower get dissipated over small choices, then these are like apps which are there in the background. They're small apps, but they are taking too much of our time. So here, what I am talking about is, I earlier said that there are certain default settings which may be undesirable and we have to correct them. But there are certain settings which are best set as default. Don't bother about it. Just like, say, if I have to send a text message. Now suppose I can go into the computer, go into the phone, and I can decide when I send a message, you know, what font size should be the message, what font should be the message. What gradation of color should be there in the font? What percentage of which color? What style it can be there? Actually, if you go into computers, if you start typing a Word document also and go into Word specifications, well, there can be dozens and dozens of choices over there. Now, most of them, they are set as default. And only if we want to change them for some purpose, we can change them. Now, our purpose when we are typing a message is just to type the message. Imagine if every time we opened a document, type a message, and the document made us choose everything else. Okay, what font, what font size, italics or normal, bold or normal, what kind of design, what kind of percentage, gradation. Now all those choices would take so much time that by the time we came to sending the message, we're so tired. So like that, the real thing is sending the message. The other things, they're okay, but they are not something which you have to keep choosing every day. They're not that important. So in modern civilization, because there are so many choices available at the material level, our energy gets consumed in choosing those things. And when our energy gets consumed, should I do this or should I do that? Should I do this? Should I wear this with this dress or that dress? Should I have this kind of hairstyle or that kind of hairstyle? Should I have this or should I have that? Now, this is important, but this is not all that important. But so much mental energy goes into that, that when actually real serious stuff comes up, we have no energy left. I read one place that Bill Gates is the founder of Microsoft. Yeah. So I read in one place that for many years when he would come to office, he would just wear one pair, same pair of shirt and pant, with same color. And I asked him why. He says, that is one less decision to make. That is one less decision to make. So what is happening over here? If we increase the number of decisions we have to do, then we dissipate our energy. So when we talk about simplicity, sometimes we think, you know, simplicity, what does simplicity, does it mean living in a hut, you know, using no technology? No, simplicity doesn't mean depriving ourselves of necessities. Simplicity means simply protecting ourselves from complexities, from unnecessary complexities. Their simplicity means protecting ourselves from unnecessary complexities. So now, as I said about optimizers and maximizers, when we make every choice is a very important choice. So a phone is not simply a device for communication. A phone becomes a status symbol. A phone becomes a statement about who you are. A phone becomes a statement of what your personality is. Then we spend so much time and energy thinking, oh, what phone should I have? What color should I have? What screen should it have? What package should I have? So unnecessarily, even the civilization, when a culture is too materialistic, small choices are made into very big choices. And that is exactly like small apps taking huge amount of energy. So we will find that if we decide, okay, these are things which I have to do on a daily basis, but I won't put too much energy. I make same decision and stick to the decision. And we minimize the options in our material life. Not in the sense of depriving ourselves, but in the sense of focusing ourselves. So having unlimited choices, that does not necessarily increase our freedom. That actually simply drains our energy. So the real freedom comes by the ability to make wise choices. If that ability is not there, then just having many options is not freedom. That is actually it may seem like freedom, but it is a burden. So to a large extent, if you want to focus on important things, we have to make less important things like default. Okay, I'll not spend so much time in this, so that I can focus more time on this. And when we find within our mind that our energy is being sucked, we look at ourselves and we look at, okay, what was I thinking about? If we look at what we are thinking about most of the time, you know, they are not really very important things. The important things which we need to think about, we need to put our time in, often they stay at the back of our mind, other things crowd into the front. And when they crowd into the front, then they consume our time. So when we talk about freedom, can you just please move ahead? We need to redefine freedom. Redefining freedom, there are two kinds of freedoms. There is freedom for and there is freedom from. So for example, freedom for, today's culture focuses a lot on freedom for. You know, if I want to drink, I'll drink. If I want to take drugs, I'll take drugs. If I want to have free sex, I'll have free sex. Whatever it is. We want to be free to do what we want to do. But there are freedom for is not the only kind of freedom. There is freedom from. I think I gave this example earlier also. If there is some person, there are two people who are staying at one place, and then their workplace there is here. In between, there is a bar. Now, did I give this example in the first class? Yeah, okay. So now what has happened here? Here, the person who has never drunk, that person, what does he feel? He doesn't even think about it. Just move straight to the office and start the work. But the person who has drunk repeatedly, as soon as they pass by the bar, they start thinking, should I drink? No. Yes. No. Yes. So actually, freedom from certain desires is actually a great freedom. So freedom from those desires frees us so that we can focus on important things. Freedom for doing whatever we want to do or whatever we think we want to do, that freedom actually often takes away our freedom to do things which are important for us. The mind, we're trying to understand what your phone can teach us about a mind. So now if you see in a computer or a phone, if there are 50 apps that are open, the phone itself does not understand which apps are important for us. You know, that for the phone, the 50 apps are just they're apps. And whichever app demands the most energy, the phone will give that energy. Unless we consciously close that app or disable that app, the phone is simply a dead machine. It will, whichever app demands energy, it will take that energy. So our mind is undiscerning like that. Whichever desire pops up in the mind, whichever idea pops up, our mental energy will be sucked over there. So our intelligence has to process. If our intelligence is not vigilant, some idea comes up in the mind, it just sucks the energy. And then when we want to do important things, we don't have any energy left for that. So actually, closing the door to certain options helps us to walk through the doors that are important for us. When we keep the unnecessary doors open, I know I have to go here, this is where my home is, but there's a door open here also, maybe I can go here. Even if I don't go there, just waste my time exploring. So now in the case of our mental energy, the mind, it just, whatever thoughts come in the mind doesn't discriminate. The intelligence can discriminate, the mind can't. So if we are not discerning, then whichever desire comes in the mind, it just starts consuming our attention. It consumes our energy. So freedom from is actually a very energizing form of freedom. Because our energy is saved for doing the things which are important for us. So the more we recognize that this is what I want to do in my life. If I want to progress in a particular area, whether it's material area or spiritual area, then other options just close. Don't let the mind entertain them so much. Can you go ahead, please? So again, moving forward, freedom comes not by rejecting all restrictions, but it comes by respecting the right restrictions. What does it mean? The standard example that Srila Prabhupada would give was a fish. Now, if a fish says, I will not accept any restrictions, and the fish comes out of water. The fish comes out of water, the fish will be miserable, will be tormented. It will die if it doesn't come into water. Now, if the fish respects the restriction, I have to be in water. Once it respects that restriction, it actually becomes free. It can swim up, it can swim down, it can swim left, it can swim right, it can swim front, it can swim back. It can go in many directions. It becomes free when it accepts the restriction. So freedom and restriction are not contradictory. Restriction is what actually enables the freedom for doing things. So consider a game like cricket. Now if you see people play, many people feel, you know, rules and restrictions, they actually take away the enjoyment of life. But no. Imagine if a cricket game match is going on and there are no rules. So the bowler comes to ball, and instead of throwing the bowler just runs right up to the batsman, pushes the batsman aside and knocks down the stumps. Or the batsman hits the ball and the wicketkeeper is out to catch. When the wicketkeeper is out to catch, the batsman comes there and knocks the wicketkeeper aside. There will be no game over there. So even for playing a game, the freedom to perform, the freedom to excel, that is facilitated when the rules of the game are accepted. So freedom doesn't come by rejecting all restrictions. It comes by respecting the right restrictions. So when we practice bhakti yoga, often there are rules and regulations. And these rules and regulations at one level can seem restrictive. But actually, they are not restrictive. They are protective. The rules and regulations, they protect us, protect our time, our energy from getting wasted in unnecessary things. Just like in a computer, sometimes in a phone, sometimes certain apps try to access certain data and then restrict the permission over there. No, this app can have only this much access, not this much access. But restriction of permission, it ensures that that app can't take up more energy, more time, more bandwidth, more data than what it requires. So like that, same way, the rules and regulations, there are the positive rules and regulations of what we should do, and there are the restrictive rules and regulations of what we should not do. The restrictive rules and regulations, they actually free us from the agitation caused by unnecessary choices. So that way, when we respect the right restrictions, we become free to do the things that are important for us. Move on, please. Nowadays people talk a lot about free love. Actually, if you consider love, love is not free. Love is binding. Love is a bond. The idea of free love was propagated by certain people who were themselves into all kinds of illicit activities. So when you say free love, the only thing that happens over there is that their idea of free, they use the word love to refer to sex. So any man can have any relationship with any woman and there should be no restriction. Now free love is actually a contradiction, self-contradiction. Because love by nature is a bond. And when we say a bond, bond means there's a restriction. So when a man and a woman form a relationship with each other, at that time, if they love each other, they form a commitment, then in a sense, they lose the freedom. They lose the freedom to interact with other members of the opposite sex. But that loss of freedom is more than compensated by the deeper connection with one person. In the Harvard Medical Review, or the medical journal, which actually studied the consequences of the what they call as the sexual revolution, where people just started engaging in free sex. They went to many college campuses and asked these kids, most of them were involving in free sex, asked them, how do you feel? Their idea was that whenever, if there are no restrictions, then you will have more bonding, more affection, more closeness. But these youths, all of them, without exception, they said that actually we feel more lonely. Although their bodies come in contact with many other bodies, their hearts remain untouched. Because they know that they are using others and others are using them. They are treating others as objects to just titillate their bodily desires, and others are using them as objects to titillate their bodily desires. So actually, it did not bring closeness. It actually created loneliness. So whenever there is love, love is a bond. So love, actually, that means freedom is a valuable value. But freedom is not the supreme value. We want freedom for some purpose. Freedom so that we can pursue something that is important for us, something that is valuable for us. Now, in general, love, it brings out the better side within people. Now, when parents have a child, now initially they may just do what they want to do, but if they have a child, that makes them responsible. That helps them to mature. That helps them to bring out their more mature, responsible side. And the same principle applies much more when we learn to love Krishna. Love by nature is a bond. But that bond frees us to bring out the best within us. Now how the bond with Krishna brings out the best within us, I'll talk that in three terms in tomorrow's session. But for today, I'll summarize and then we can have some questions. Today our talk primarily focused on the how not all freedom is freeing. We need to choose the right restrictions to become free. So I started by talking about how willpower is a finite resource. Just like we in our phone may have some apps which suck energy and our battery may get drained. So we need to check those apps. Similarly, like that in our mind, there are certain thoughts, desires, attitudes which suck our energy. Worry is one such big energy sucker. But along with that, there is also the energy that is sucked by having too many choices. When every small thing involves many, many choices, and every choice is made bigger than what it needs to be. Every choice is made into a status symbol, a statement about oneself. Then our mental energy gets consumed too much in small things. And for big things, we don't have any mental energy left. Talked about optimizers and maximizers. Maximizers who are trying to get the maximum return from every single choice. They often get the best deal. But still, their expectation becomes so high that then there is disappointment and anticlimax. And also, there is always the background fear. If I had explored more, I would have got a better choice. Optimizers recognize that there are many things in life, and for this particular choice, I have this much time. Whatever I get with it, I will accept it and I will move on. So this optimizer maximizer logic we can apply for our spiritual material life. Now in material life, today we can make practically unlimited improvement in various fields. But that can consume so much of our energy. And then we will not have any energy for spiritual life. We will not have any energy even for important things materially. Unimportant material things take up our time. Don't just battle over choices. Choose your battles. Certain things which we know if I'm not going to do it, they're not really important. Don't spend too much time on it. Just closing the door to certain options, it is not restriction. It is not deprivation. It is actually the facility to focus. Just like when we are entering messages in our text, certain things are set as default. If every time we had to choose all the parameters for a text, just drain our energy. We would not have our time for sending the text would get depleted. So similarly, when we set certain things in our life as defaults, okay, this, I won't put too much thought energy in this. Then that which matters most, we can put our thought and energy in it. The mind tends to be lazy. So if the tempting choices are easily available, the mind rushes towards that. But if certain choices are not easily available, the laziness of the mind makes it feel, okay, forget it, do it later. So we can use the laziness of the mind also for our spiritual growth by making the choices which are unhealthy not so easily available for us. Just close the doors to them. In that way, we can save our mental energy. I discussed, right, this requires redefining freedom. I talked about three things about redefining freedom. First is that freedom doesn't come just by having the facility for unlimited choices. It comes by the ability to make wise choices. Today's culture provides us unlimited choices in so many things, but it doesn't really educate us to make wise choices. Our study of scripture, our spirituality, it educates us about wise choices. And there is freedom for versus freedom from. It's freedom for doing whatever you want to do. That is not really freedom. That simply consumes our energy. Freedom from means certain options I'm not going to consider so that I can focus on certain things which are more important for me. And lastly, I discussed about free love. It's a self-contradiction. Love is a bond. Love restricts our options, but then it deepens our connections. Because we restrict the option of connecting with many people. In the process, we deepen our connection with one person. Love restricts our options but deepens our connections. And whenever there is the genuine love, that actually inspires people to become better. As parents become more responsible when they have a child and they love the child. Like that same way, love, which is actually a restriction to our freedom, it helps us to become better. And the supreme love for Krishna helps us to become the best that we can be. How that happens, we will, through the process of Bhakti Yoga, we'll discuss in tomorrow's class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Does anyone have any questions or comments?
Swamiji, you talk about choices, and there's a book on this subject, choice, by one of the eminent authors on Mendimo. He says, Lord, out of all the faculties you have given me, out of all the faculties you have given to human beings, it is the capacity to make choice, whether it is choice of a partner, or choice of an input if you are in a house, or any. So, we have to exert this choice, and technologically, you know, everything is going very fast. Once you buy anything, you mention about toothpaste or anything, you are confused when you make a choice. So, should we lower our standards and compromise within that specified time that, okay, anything we do because it is draining my energy? Or should we exert our capacity to choose? That's my question.
Yeah. The capacity to choose is a gift from God. So, shouldn't we use that capacity to choose wisely, or should we just lower our standards because it drains our energy? See, the point is not that we don't exert our capacity to choose. The point is we make choices that really matter. There are choices that matter a lot, and the choices don't matter so much. So today, when there are just so many choices to make, whichever choice pops up first in our mind, we spend a lot of time and energy on that. But that may not be the most important thing. It's like sometimes in a meeting, some people speak very loudly. Now, just because those people are speaking the loudest, that doesn't mean that their opinion is the best. Sometimes some other people may be really wise, but they may be soft-spoken. So, if in a meeting, decisions were made based on whoever speaks the loudest, and often bad decisions will be made. So like that, sometimes in our mind, there are certain desires, certain ideas just are screaming loudly. And then we give inordinate attention to them. And we spend a lot of time and energy on making those choices. So before we exert the capacity to choose, we need to make a more fundamental exertion of that capacity. That is, which choices are important for me, which choices are not important. And the choices that are important, definitely we need to exert time and energy in choosing. But the choices that are not all that important, put them aside. Yes, I will choose them, I will use my intelligence, but I won't spend disproportionate amount of time in choosing. Does it answer your question?
Yes.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you. One of the questions, you know, how to differentiate between where I am listening to the mind or I am making intelligent choice? Because always, you will always have that kind of a confusion, because after the choice, the outcome is good. Everybody appreciates that you made a good choice and you are doing it, but if you made a wrong choice, people will start abusing you, you can use your mind.
Okay. So, how do we know whether we are choosing based on the mind or the intelligence? Because sometimes the result comes out good, people appreciate, and they say you are very intelligent. But if the result comes out bad, then they say you just acted based on the mental platform. People will say like that. Yeah, that is true. See, the Mahabharata talks about whether an option is good or bad. There are broadly three parameters for deciding it. There is intent, there is content, and there is consequence. That means, okay, what is my intention in doing this? That is one factor which determines whether it was the right choice or wrong choice. But good intention alone is not enough. Second is, sometimes we may give some advice to someone. Do like this, don't do like this. But then some complication comes up which we had no idea about. So our intent was good. If I am not a trained doctor and I give medical advice to someone, my good intention is not enough. Intent is important. If I am a trained doctor, but my intention is to complicate the patient's disease so that I can earn more money, I will not give good advice. So intent is one factor, and there is content. Content is what actually we are doing. So in a broad sense, there are certain things which are, say, speaking truthfully is a good thing. Speaking lies is a bad thing. So there are general moral understanding and ethical understanding in terms of content. It's not watertight. In certain emergencies, doing something which apparently seems wrong may be right. So if some rioters have come to, are chasing someone to kill the person, and that person comes to our house, and please save me, please hide me. And we hide that person is our friend, we hide him in our house. And the rioters knock on our door. Is he here? Should we speak the truth at that time? Speaking the truth will mean that person will die. So, we can't only decide based on content. Content is an important guideline, but there is consequence also. In that situation, speaking the truth is not the right thing because it will cause the death of the person. So, broadly speaking, there is intent, content, and consequence. All these three are important in terms of making a decision. So, now, when we are practicing bhakti, what does bhakti do? Bhakti, first of all, it purifies our intent. Practicing bhakti yoga, it purifies our intent. Now, we learn to become more selfless. Or we learn to become more long-term in our thinking, so short-term. So, our intent itself becomes deeper, higher, purer. Similarly, bhakti educates us about content. Today we live in an age of moral relativism. If you feels good for you, it's right for you. Feels bad for you, it's bad for you. If it feels bad to you, it's bad, it's wrong for you. Now, moral relativism is actually, nobody is a moral relativist, ultimately. Because if you ask any person, do you believe that there are some people in the world who are doing terrible things? And if you ask anybody in the world, they say, yes. I'll say, terrorists are killing innocent people. They're doing terrible things. And you turn around and ask them, do those terrible terrorists think they're doing terrible things? No, they think I'm doing the right thing. Isn't it? So just our own beliefs, our own feeling about certain things doesn't determine right or wrong. So nobody can be nobody is a total moral relativist. The point is, the scripture which uses education of right and wrong in terms of content. Tasmat shastram pramanam te karya karya vastitav. Yatva shastra vidhanavatam karma kartam iharasi. Krishna says in 16.24 in the Bhagavad Gita, therefore based on shastra, understand what is right and what is wrong. So in terms of content. And then in terms of consequence, it is said that the more we live in the mode of goodness, the more sarvadvareshu dehesmin prakasham upajayate. That actually, when we are in the mode of goodness, our senses are illumined with knowledge. That means we can actually see if this road is dark, if this room is dark, I can't see what is in the next step ahead of me. I can't see if there's a ditch ahead of me. But if there's light, I can see there's a ditch, I'll fall down. So like that, the more we become situated in the mode of goodness, the more we are able to see the consequences of what we are doing. And thus we can choose better. Of course, still there is no guarantee that always our choices will be right choices. But we can learn. So, coming back to a specific question about mind and intelligence. How do we know whether we are choosing based on mind or intelligence? Generally speaking, if we act impulsively. And if that impulse is for something which is not in harmony with scripture. Broadly speaking, then we should know that that is the mind speaking. If something is an important decision to make, then it is best not to make that decision impulsively. Just put a freeze button on it. Put a pause. Okay, I'll make a decision, but after some time. If we feel consistently inspired, if I decide this is what I want to do, I feel like doing this now. But I just pause. And after one day also, I feel like the same thing. After 1 week also, I feel like the same thing. After 1 month, I also feel the same thing. Then, we can maybe write down our thoughts and look, after 1 month, we may say, okay, I was feeling like this, but I didn't think about this. This is not so important. This is not a very reasonable thing. When we write down certain things, especially I'm talking about important decisions which we have to make, when we write down some things, then that written down, getting the thoughts out of the mind, just decreases the mental congestion. That distance brings perspective. writing down also helps us to have a snapshot of our mind. And after 1 week, when I look at it again, I'm not thinking the same thing. So many other things to consider. And realize, so if something, if we find after 1 week, our thoughts are very different from what they were 1 week before. Then we understand that this is just a flickering, oscillating mind going up and down. But if a period of time, I'm talking about again important decisions, then if over a period of time, it's not that we constantly think about things. We just write it down, get it out of the mind. We decide, okay, maybe once a week, I'll sit down and I'll put concentrated time on thinking about this, thinking through this. And then we figure it out again. If week after week after week, we find our thoughts continuously going the same direction, then we think, this is not just a flickering impulse of the mind. This is actually, this is more like a consistent inclination or inspiration that I have. And then when we act on it, we will act with conviction. Sometimes we may make a right choice, but if we are not convinced about it, we will not go through it wholeheartedly. And then we will not get the right result. Sometimes we may make a wrong choice also, but if we have thought through it carefully, then we will be able to do course correction. Hey, I thought like this. No, it's not working out like this. So maybe I need to adjust this, adjust that. So he says that plans don't always work, but planning always works. What that means is that our specific plan, I'll do like this, I'll do like this, I'll do like this, it doesn't always work. In fact, you know, making plans itself, to some extent, whenever we make plans, we are trying to become the controller. You know, I'll do this, 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 this. And sometimes we can control things, sometimes we can't control things. But the activity of planning, so making plans and trying to execute plans, that is to some extent in the mode of passion. Because we are trying to be controllers. But planning as an activity is in the mode of goodness. In sattva guna. Because planning means you're thinking. If this happens, this factor I'm considering. And so plans may not work, but planning works. In the sense that planning gives us an overall perspective. And then even if a particular plan goes wrong, we know, oh, I can do this for course correction. I need to do this. I need to adjust this. So that's why if we have to make important decisions, we just don't act impulsively, but we give due thought to those things. And due thought doesn't mean we let them at the background of our mind just keep nagging us, but rather we get it out and periodically, as per a plan, revisit it. And then we'll be able to deliberate and make the decision. Does it answer your question? Ultimately, of course, we need to pray to Krishna. The Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenama Upayantite. Krishna gives us the intelligence. But then even when Krishna gives us the intelligence, if we are not receptive, we will not be able to accept it. So when we do our homework, when we use our intelligence and show Krishna that, Krishna, I am using all the intelligence that I have, then Krishna will give us whatever intelligence we are lacking. And then we can make the right choice. Okay? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Any other questions? So within bhakti also we have to make many choices. So how do we make choices within bhakti? Actually, this is the topic of last session tomorrow. I'll just talk briefly right now. In bhakti, there is the form of service and there is the purpose of service, or the principle. The principle is, I am meant to serve Krishna. Krishna is my Lord, I am his servant. That principle remains unchanging. The form in which we serve, that will change according to time, place, circumstance. So now, which particular form we choose when, that is something which we have to use our God-given intelligence for that. So there are two broad factors in this. One is, initially, we do whatever we are told to do. And that is our submission. In bhakti, there is two aspects to it. One is our submission to our guides, but the second is our own initiative. That is also important. Because it's not that there'll always be some senior devotee over our head telling us, do this. You know, the world is a big place. We may go to places where we may not have association. We have to also take decisions ourselves. So while doing whatever we are told to do, we also observe. Now, what is it that I like to do? What is it that I am good at doing? Two factors. What is it that I like doing? What is it I am good at doing? And if we find these two things working in a particular avenue, we can understand that more or less this is my nature. And then we can try to focus more and more of our energy on that. Some of us may like to distribute books. Some of us may like to study scripture and teach scripture. Some of us may just like to do cooking. Some of us may like to do deity worship. Some of us, there are so many services in bhakti. And we will, if we are vigilant, we'll be able to observe which is it that I connect with. We again do whatever we are told to do, but at the same time, we take initiative to find out what we are good at, what we like. And Krishna says, Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. When he talks about Varnashram, the point of Varnashram is not simply to divide people into four Varnas. The point is to engage people in a way that is natural to their material situation. So to engage Brahmanas in intellectual work, to engage Kshatriyas in administrative work, in martial work. So like that, the point is to engage people according to what they are naturally endowed with. So Guna, when we like something, we that is like corresponding with the Guna. And when we are good at something, that is like corresponding with karma. So when we are comfortable doing something and when we are competent doing something, that we can understand is like our guna karma. By doing that, we can actually get a steady service which we feel inspired to do and which we will make a tangible contribution to. That way we can move onwards in our bhakti. And similarly with the spiritual stimuli which we have. Now, some of us may like particular deities in a particular dress. Some of us may like a particular kirtan, a particular dhun. Some of us may like a particular holy place. Among the worshipable forms on the altar also, some of us may be attracted to a particular person. These are all individual spiritual preferences. The principle is we are devoted to the Lord. But which particular manifestation of the Lord we may feel especially connected with, that will vary. And that's a manifestation of our individuality. So as we are doing our bhakti, we keep also observing about the spiritual manifestations. This is actually called uddipan, spiritual stimulus. And whichever uddipan triggers us the most, triggers our spiritual desire the most, we cherish that. And thus, we move forward so that we can connect with Krishna more deeply. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. So if we have social pressure in a particular situation to do a particular thing, how do we deal with that? In general, when we are practicing bhakti, there is a dynamic tension between having freedom and having facility. What it means is, if we want freedom, we won't have facilities. If you want facility, we won't have freedom. That's how it works. So, if we feel strongly inspired to do something, then we won't get facilities from us. One facility is, it's support from others. Because whenever there's a particular system in place, the focus of that system, the focus of the leaders of that system will be on maintaining that, expanding that. It's not that doing something else is wrong. But it's unreasonable for us to expect them to facilitate us, because their energy is going to be focused on doing what they are inspired to do. So, in the initial stages of our life, it's important that we focus more on doing what we are told to do, so that we learn the virtues of submission, we learn how things work, we learn what all we can do. But over a period of time, if we feel inspired to do something, as long as it is not earning the disapproval of others, then if we feel very driven to do something, we can do it. The important thing is that we don't alienate or hurt others. We don't, in order to get the space, that space to do what we want to do, we don't have to criticize what others are doing. It's not that they are wrong and we are right, or that we are wrong and they are right. It is just that we all have different inspirations in our bhakti. We can all can have. And Srila Prabhupada has made a big enough house where we all can serve Krishna in different ways. So we will have to decide that. If we want the facility of social approval, even within the devotee community, we will have to do that which will is the focus of that particular society, that particular social group. If we want the freedom of doing what we feel inspired to do, then we have to tolerate not getting social approval. But either way, we shouldn't spoil relationships. We shouldn't think that, you know, whoever is not supporting us, they are bad people. Or if, basically, we should maintain good relationships and then at a practical level, do what is the best for our spiritual growth. And in general, over a period of time, see what happens is, if we have served in a competent, consistent way for some amount of time, then senior devotees also see that we are trustworthy. And then they will give us the freedom also. Okay, if you feel inspired to do that, you do that. They may not facilitate, because the facilities are limited, and they may use those facilities for doing what they feel inspired to do. But at least they see that, okay, you have an idea, you can do it. So we should generally work in such a way that cordiality and amicability is maintained in relationships. But if we feel strongly inspired to do something, we should know that we'll have to do it with our initiative. We shouldn't think that others will necessarily help us. Because, and it's not that they are unhelpful, it's just that everybody has their priorities, even in the service to Krishna. Does it answer your question? Any other questions? Shall we stop here? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki, Tai Gaur Premanandi. So, I have a few books here.